0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. We were contacted by a concerned parent who was at the end of her tether. We're calling her Martina for this discussion. After discovering that her daughter, and remember, on the brink of their summer holidays, has been enduring horrific online bullying, getting bombarded by messages online, and which is leaving her extremely upset. And at one stage, she told us, leading up to this contribution, that with the summer holidays coming up, she said she won't even go outside the house. And Martina is appealing for help from other parents who've been in the same position. She wants advice and wants to warn parents about how their children could be receiving these awful messages. And Martina sent it to us, which in the best way she felt she wanted to do it at this stage, which is in a WhatsApp voice message.
Hi, Joe. I was just wondering if I could get my story out there and get a bit of advice. My daughter was badly bullied online and offline over the past 2 years. She's a 13-year-old girl that has endured a serious amount of harm, mental abuse, and it has got to the stage now where she's not leaving the house. Some of the online abuse was rectified, but it has not helped her in any way. If anything, it made stuff worse. Contacting authorities. My daughter one evening was online bullied without me knowing and endured 12 hours of torture. And the next day she came out for a walk with me like nothing had happened. And that evening I found everything on her phone. Basically, where my daughter has gone to school, I had to take her out of school. She will be attending another school. Us as a family will have to relocate because where we're living at the moment is just not feasible for her. She doesn't like leaving the house. And I was just wondering if anybody has gone through something similar. She has lost all her confidence. She's been called names. She's been pushed about. On and offline. She has no confidence left, and it's just an extreme shame coming from such a confident, bubbly girl to now having no confidence, doesn't like leaving the house, doesn't like coming off with us as a family. And I would just like to really, really warn parents that when you're asleep at night and your child has a device, anything could be happening while you're sleeping. Anything could be going on that device, and just please check your children's device and don't go through, or don't let your child go through what my daughter went through.
And the point is that bullying of that nature doesn't end outside the school gate, or indeed outside the hall door. It follows you in the hall door right up the stairs if you're going to your bedroom and into your bedroom, and that's the point that's been made there by our caller. Now, back to the issues raised yesterday at the beginning of the programme about the use of language, and especially in schools and in daily discourse. We've been contacted by Mary. Mary, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You were a teacher.
I am, that's right, secondary school teacher.
And you have one very strong. You say, for the past number of years, my teaching life has been bombarded by departmental jargon, catchphrases, policies, strategies, methodologies, statement of learning, learning objectives. The list goes on. And then at one stage you were told, give me the phrase that an inspector said to you, you had to...
unpack my action verbs.
Well, can you
at the beginning
can
of
you
class, un- that well, would be a good idea to unpack the action verbs.
Well,
at the beginning
you,
of class.
Can you unpack that?
I can't
line.
Even unpack that for you. Now, I think it means something along the lines of, like, today we're going to explore this and we're going to observe this. So verbs that kind of bring to life the action of the subject is what I'm presuming it means.
Unpack my action verbs.
At the beginning of class, yeah.
How did you respond when that was put to you by the inspector?
Well, to be honest...
After many years teaching...
I'm nearly 30 okay. odd now at this stage.
But everyone learns as we go along, so that's but anyway.
Actually, on that particular day when the inspector came in during an SPHE class, okay. and it was an incidental inspection, which is a drive-by one. They just arrive, you know. So okay. On that particular day, I teach English and French, but I also teach SPHE. Now, English and French would be my subjects that I studied and qualified for, whereas SPHE is a subject that I've done few in-service courses at, you know. And basically, on the particular day, it was a great class because I had continued it from the previous week. It was a class on bullying, actually, and I had a walking debate going on in the class, and I had a little video clip that I was going to show. And some days for SPHE, I might just sit and chat with the boys, mm-hmm. you know. But this particular class, I was delighted because I thought, okay, at least I kind of it's action packed. Do you know what I mean? Right. There's things happening, but. When I finished the class in the afternoon, I met with the inspector, and the inspector began with, like, unpack the action verbs at the beginning of class. And, you know, she began by saying that you've a lovely relationship with the boys and all that. But it became then about, like, maybe you should think about using think, pair, share activities. And then with my video clip, mm-hmm. She wanted me to maybe give a listening task first. Because I had asked them about the different types of bullying, and okay. then I showed the video where she thought it would be better if I actually... So on that day, I said to her, but surely we're achieving the same end. It doesn't really matter which way I do it, you know? Another thing was to avoid being textbook dependent. Like, there was just an awful lot of things got said on the day, and I thought, hang on a second, this isn't constructive criticism about my teaching. This is junior cycle jargon. You're promoting the junior cycle via me through to the rest of the staff. You know, that I go back and I say, oh, she thought I should use think, pair, share. She thought I should unpack my action verbs. I mean, I learned more that day, I'll have to say, than I probably did in because it was, you know, it was happening to me than I had in in-service courses. But, like, you go to in-service courses and you're bowled over by the jargon. I mean, I genuinely don't understand some of the things that they're talking about, you know. And I was explaining earlier as well that when we go into class, we're meant to put a learning intention up on the board, and we're meant to put up success criteria, you know. Okay. Now, I don't do that. Now, if an inspector came in, I should be doing it. Now, the thing I feel about it is that, like, my learning intention is to teach French. My learning intention is to teach English. On a particular day, I might have a specific learning intention, like maybe I'm going to teach them the future tense. Maybe I'm going to teach them the past tense. But some days, my learning intention is just to teach them maybe vocab in French, you know, or it's very prescriptive, like what they're, and then the junior cycle itself is meant. They're facilitating the different learning styles of students, which is great. I'm all for that. But then they're tying me down to teaching a particular way, you know. But it's the jargon, really. And it's just, I feel, they're making me feel like I'm a bad teacher, you know. Mm. I feel a little bit, not a little bit, I feel disillusioned. I feel overwhelmed, disappointed. I'm a good teacher, but I don't feel I am anymore, you know.
And is this the new junior cycle course?
Yeah.
And that's a given?
When you say that's a given, what do you mean?
That's immutable, you can't...
Yeah, all the jargon stuff, yeah.
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 Okay, and if you don't write on the board and you happen to get an inspector call...
Well, people do, you see, when the inspector comes, then they'll write up learning intentions and they'll write up success criteria. Now, some teachers are probably very good at doing that.
Yeah, but say, you know? But Mary, say you see the school inspector cycling into the schoolyard on his or her bike, and do you immediately reach for your whiteboard marker and write up?
In my school now, we actually have... stuff printed out that's on the board, so they're like plastic posters on the board that say success criteria or that say so they're there.
And if you're caught out and they weren't there, your learning intention,
you write them up, or quickly. Most teachers on the day of an inspection would write them, you know, or
What is the sanction if you don't write
them?
They
just address you afterwards and just say, look, it would be a good idea to show your learning intentions. It would be a good idea, you know. And I presume you're, you know, it's not...
It'd be a good idea to, unpack...
You know? But now, a lot of young teachers probably would, because they'll be trained in that style, you know. But I would say...
Okay. It'd be a good idea to unpack your packet of whiteboard markers.
Yes.
as well as unpacking your, what was it, unpack my action verbs.
Yeah.
Dr. Ronan Collins, well-known geriatrician. Ronan, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
You contacted us about language, but in your field. Go ahead, Ronan.
Well, I was listening with great interest yesterday, Joe, about the discourse on the use of language. And, of course, the show was largely discussing language around disability and people with physical impairments. And, of course, this is a very kind of salient topic as well in my own speciality of geriatric medicine.
Okay.
Even the term itself within geriatric medicine has become a less favourable term, particularly amongst the public, for obvious reasons, because it has stigmatisations potentially attached to it. That has migrated, of course, across to the use of phrases such as the elderly, which could be seen as a pejorative and stigmatizing term as well, associated with all connotations and stereotypical images of older people. And so language is very important, but I am also a great believer in that the word in itself is neither offensive nor necessarily stigmatizing, but rather... society's reaction or society's interpretation of what it means to be older. Or indeed, as a friend said to me recently, a non-English speaker from Belgium said to me, I don't understand all your fuss about the elderly. I'm quite happy to be known as among the elders and to be elderly. I just wish society would respect us getting older to a greater extent. And so I think language in itself and the words in themselves are neither offensive, they're just words. It's the context in which they're used and the societal meaning behind them that gives offence to a word. For example, and I use this with a great trepidation, I'll probably sink this phrase forever now, but I remember one time watching television where a very prominent American black politician was saying that it was time to get down to business and it was time to get down to the nitty-gritty. And I think... had he known the origins of the word nitty-gritty, he'd never have used that term. It effectively meant the hold of a slave ship. But, of course, it means something very completely different now. And so what I'm saying, language evolves, of course, and the meanings of language changes over time as well. But it is never the words themselves necessarily that are offensive. It is the context in which they are used. And so I think, for example... which we're reflecting on the discussion about disability yesterday as well.
Yeah.
I remember when Ian Jury, you probably remember this yourself. Ian Jury and the Blockheads brought out a song in the year to raise awareness about physical impairment. And he brought out a very controversial song at the time called Spasticus Autisticus. And he was really raising and challenging us to confront our use of language and the way we refer to people and the way we use to people. And so I think art, and I know the discussion yesterday was about the use of a word within the context of a novel, and there was a broader discussion about To Kill a Mockingbird and the use of the N-word within that. But sometimes it would be a mistake to ban words, as one of your listeners said yesterday, go down the route of newspeak and ban words, because the context in which the words are used may provoke very important questions for us to answer. The words themselves are neither offensive. It is the context in which words are used that is offensive.
But there was one of the strongest examples yesterday, Ronan, was a woman who lived in Spain, and the Spanish word for disability she came across was minus validio, basically without validity.
Yes, but of course, that translated into English as well, Joe, if you remember, into our use of the term invalid. And so that is a word we would never use now, but we used such terminology ourselves in the English language. And so when you think about it, it may not have sounded like invalid.
Okay, yes, very strong point, yeah.
But it was the same translation. And again, this wouldn't have been appropriate language.
Yeah,
and I think we've got more insightful in our views of your kind of disability and impairment. And I think...
Is there any words you would bridle at? Or even that you would check yourself if you came out with them in the course of your work?
Well, there's lots of words I wouldn't use. But again, just to go back to the point about if we went back as tomorrow is June the 16th and we're talking about banning words and banning literature, you know, James Joyce's great work was effectively censored and banned by this country. Because the language or the thoughts or the subject matter that was being discussed was felt to be unsuitable. And so there is a great danger as well about, now I'm not advocating gratuitous use of offensive language that is demeaning and disrespectful of people. But I'm also making the argument that it is a mistake to ban language and words, because language and words in themselves are not offensive. It is the context in which they're used. But going back to your question, in my area of medicine, and increasingly if you ask older people how they would be preferred to be referred, they would prefer, particularly in Ireland and England, these English-speaking areas as older rather than elderly. And indeed, the United Nations Human Rights Commission also suggested that we should avoid using unnecessarily negative words and that older is a better descriptor rather than elderly. That being said, you go to other cultures like Japan, for example, and you will have four or five different versions of the word elder and elderly. And the connotation of those words is a much more respectful term to refer to an older senior person. And so, again, I go back to my point. It is not the word in itself that is offensive. It is the societal meaning attached to that word that I think is the important point. And that, of course, can change with the cultures as well. And they may not be perceived by, and increasingly we're European, not everybody is English speaking as a first language and nuances may be lost.
Okay, let me bring in Siobhan Coakley. Joe at RT.ie, 51551 is our text number. You have a suggestion about language as well, Siobhan.
Yes, hi, Joe. It's just really, I suppose, it's a follow-on from what your previous speaker had said about the word disability and, I suppose, how that has evolved over time. And I think that going forward in Ireland, a word that I would feel is more appropriate being the parent of a child with multiple medical diagnoses would be differently abled, because I feel that the word disability, implies something wrong, dysfunctional, whereas every child, every person with a disability has a level of ability unique to them. So again, I suppose it's the kind of negative connotations around the disability as opposed to someone who's differently abled, and that would be across the spectrum of disability, be it autism, be it cerebral palsy, be it, a neurological, degenerative condition. So I suppose that was just my thought. It's a word I came across in the States a few years ago. It was related actually to a publication about toys. It was a toy catalogue from one of the toy companies in the States. And the title of the brochure was Toys for Differently Abled Children. And it was mainstream toys, but just presented in a way that, okay, so if a child has a sensory difficulty, this toy would work for them. And it just struck me. I was like, right, they're differently abled, of course, because my son is disabled, but he has lots of abilities. And I suppose it's more a positive thing. And I think as well, it makes it more inclusive in our society, because, by implying, oh, there's something wrong. Well, it's just these people, there's something wrong, but there's a lot right, and there's a lot they can do with adaptions. Mm-hmm. And again, I suppose another word that's out there is rehabilitation. And if, for example, you acquire a brain injury throughout your life, you are, rehabilitated. However, if your child is born with a disability, they're habilitated by the use of early intervention therapies and things like that. So I suppose it's just about the evolution of language, really, and how, terms that were maybe offensive now weren't offensive 50 years ago, and where are we going with the word disability? And I suppose our approach to disability in a society, we talk about being inclusive and we talk about integration, but yet the word is always saying, well, yeah, but there's something wrong, there's something different, as opposed to, well, you have an ability to do this, you just do it differently mm-hmm. than the other child in your class, you know. So yeah, so that it was just, and like I said,
Sinead made the point yesterday, who began this discussion about her two boys who have cerebral palsy, and the assumption that people seem to have is because they had a physical disability, they also had a mental or an intellectual disability.
Yeah, absolutely,
And she even spoke about, say, going to a parking spot that's known as a disabled parking spot, and she was abused because she stepped out of the car, obviously, because she was mm-hmm. driving, and then somebody thought she was abled and therefore she shouldn't be using the spot. Has that ever happened to you?
Yes, it has, unfortunately. When my child was, he was about 3 or 4, and we were actually coming from a therapy session in Dublin, and we parked at a coffee shop that we knew the bathroom there would work for him. We knew it was a quiet coffee shop yeah. because, again, he has sensory difficulties. And so we took him out of the car, but at that time, he didn't have a wheelchair. He had a buggy. So we lifted him out of his car seat into the buggy, and off we went. We came back, and there was a note left on the car. Someone had seen us. He had, you know, a disability badge. It was all above board. You know, he'd got it through the Irish Wheelchair Association, all of that. And we were accused of misusing the parking badge, and that we should have more thought for people who are disabled, and having a child does not entitle us to use a disability spot. Now, if the person that wrote the note mm-hmm. had taken a minute, I mean, what 4-year-old do you lift out of a car seat and into a buggy? You know, that picture alone should have, you know. So, you know, it's just, look, it's every day. You know, when you're parenting a child with difficulties, you're on a different bus to other parents in this country. And that's unfortunately the case. Everything is a battle. And I mean, I'm not getting into all the battles we've ever had, you know. But I suppose the point is, it's the attitude.
Everything is a battle.
You know. Yeah, absolutely. But again, you know, again, it's about the attitude, you know, in society, I think, that, you know, we really need to work on and change. These children are differently abled. We need to spend more of our time recognising their abilities and bringing those abilities on to whatever their potential may be. You know, like my son is happy out, going to school, you know, a typical 9-year-old in so many ways. You know, he doesn't have an intellectual disability, he has a physical disability, he has multiple physical disabilities and differences. But that said, he can still do a lot of stuff, but with the use of adaptive equipment, etc. But he still has that ability. So, again,
yeah,
you know,
good point, yeah.
It's just how we look at it, you know. It's more positive to focus on their abilities and what they can do, and promoting their abilities. And, you know, with that comes inclusion and integration, you know, in a really meaningful way. Yeah.
Same with Siobhan. Marion.
Hello, Joe.
Good afternoon. Your point, please.
Just a couple of things from yesterday. I think that term, people with determination, is ridiculous, patronising and condescending. And I know that sometimes coping with one's health issues, you have very little determination left. And it's kind of putting the focus that the person should be campaigning, should mm-hmm. be determined out there. And there was one point a young woman rang in with, and she said she liked to be called disabled because society has disabled her. And again, that's moving the whole thing to society and society's perceptions, attitude, and the structures that actually are barriers to, you know, having an equal part in society and community. And language is so powerful, and we come labels. I would have said, you know, I'm a person with a disability in the way that, you know, we label people as refugees. It's a person who has refugee status.
Okay.
But having heard that young woman, I'm kind of thinking, well, actually, she's right. We people are disabled because of society. So I think it's time we looked at language and it changes over time, and what's acceptable in one country or one era is not in another. But very interesting conversation, but I think it goes back to the structures that keep people disabled and in their own homes because they don't have access to places outside or transport or parking.
But Marion, your point, it is a disability is something you have rather than something you are.
Definitely. And sometimes all your energy is going into coping with health issues.
Yeah.
And the idea that you have to become a campaigner or an advocate, which many people do, and I mean, that's why you've so many people ringing up.
But you've enough to be doing.
Yes.
You have enough to be getting. What did Siobhan say was so many challenges? You're fighting everything.
And you're further
fighting.
Disabled.
Sorry, you're fighting for everything.
Yes, and you're further disabled just by the very society, the paths, the lack of adequate parking, lack of accessible buildings and restaurants and toilets.
Let me bring Aisling Conroy. Aisling, you want to talk about your son, who's now in his 20s.
He was in a wheelchair as a child for a kind of a few months since when he was having treatment on his leg. The only thing that I thought was that the minute you sit into a wheelchair, whatever age you are, be you an old person or a child, you suddenly become a non-person, because I used to be kind of wheeling him along and other kids his own age used to come up and say, what's wrong with him? That used to really annoy him. And I'd say, well, why don't you ask him? He's right here.
Yeah.
And so, I completely agree with why I contacted you was I just agreed so much. I think anybody who pushes a wheelchair, it's the onus is on them to say, why are you asking me? It's important. I don't think anybody does anything. I don't think people are deliberately being mean or trying. I would say the number of people who are deliberately using language to put other people down is quite small.
Okay.
I would say the vast majority of people just don't, you put your foot in it, you blunder into it without realizing. I mean, I could probably have been one of those people who said, what's wrong with him? Instead, but once you realise, it suddenly becomes clear to you. And I think it's just about waking people up. Like, I'm so conscious now about if I'm parking the car, I'll never block a footpath, because even if you're only going to be a minute, that means that somebody in a wheelchair or pushing a buggy has to go out into the road. And, all little things like that you just need to be more conscious of. That's all I wanted to say.
And it's a remembrance. I presume it's a long time ago since I heard, that phrase, if you're with somebody and they say, does he take sugar?
Yeah, exactly. Does he take sugar?
Ask him.
Why don't you ask him?
Ask her.
But it hasn't died. That attitude has not died. It's still there. And that person in the hospital that, how the whole thing started, the man in the hospital being wheeled by his 13-year-old grandson, that person in the hospital was trying to be helpful and was trying to be nice, wasn't trying to put that man down, but just didn't think.
Yeah, and maybe if he or she heard the piece, it becomes a little bit
mortified and say, oh God,
and becomes
what have I said?
A little bit of gentle education rather than forcing something down someone's throat. Go back to Dr. Ronan Collins. Is there a lexicon in medicine? Is there a lexicon that, I know you've a MIMS directory which tells you all the new medicines and how
think there's, like everybody else, I think there's evolving thought processes and the way we approach things. And like medicine, like society changes as well. I think there's two comments I think I'd really like to enforce that that Aisling, I think, and Siobhan brought up and Marion brought up. First of all, the majority of people are well-meaning. I think there's a danger here as well, but going back to the language, in being, I suppose, and I have to phrase this kind of particularly careful, but taking offence where none was meant. And rather than doubling down on that, we need to gently reinforce better education. I think that's important. I think the second thing, I go back to Siobhan's comment, I would agree with her. I think, you know, differently abled is very important. But again, I think society disables a lot of people, and not in any way to trivialise some of the more serious medical conditions, but many older people themselves are disabled by the way which society is designed, the way our hospitals are designed, the way our public transport is designed, and increasingly, and of concern to me, the way our technology is designed. Technology, which should be, has the great power to include everybody and enable everybody to be full participating citizens, is not always designed with all our citizens in mind. And I think, for example, particularly the tech companies, if I was kind of licensing them, I would make sure that they've got proper, if you like, age accreditation and maybe other impairment accreditation to ensure people can engage with the technologies appropriately. Because otherwise, you know, the recent, for example, I will imagine, for customers of the banks that are closing, this will create a lot of difficulty for older people in trying to move their accounts across online, because a lot of technology will not have been designed with older people in mind. And so going back to the other comment that I think Aisling, or is it Alison, made there... Aisling made there about, you know, people referring to her son, you know, and Aisling correctly redirecting, well, ask my son. You get this with older people as well. For example, you go less commonly now, but there was a time where you went out into the outpatients and you might call for, let's make up a name, Mrs. Angela Murphy, and Mrs. Angela Murphy's daughter would be up out of the seat and into your room before Mrs. Murphy got a chance to come in and talk to you about her condition. And there was a certain paternalism involved with older people as well. I heard someone saying recently they're out buying a new kitchen with their mother. Their mother was a customer, and the person selling the kitchen spent all the time talking to her daughter, who wasn't buying the kitchen at all. And so this invisibility sometimes transgresses not just to people with visibly physical impairments, perhaps, but also actually to older people, just on the basis of how old they might look. And I do think that this is a an issue in society that needs to be addressed. And that, you know, everyone has the right, obviously, to be presumed to have full self-autonomy and to be able to participate in as full a way in society as possible. And that should be a given, whether you're old, whether you're in a wheelchair, whether you've got visual impairment in whatever way. And so I think that mindset just needs to change. And, you know, it is changing, I think.
If you can, I know you've got to go around in your work, but I'm also, I know in your initial contact, you mentioned Dr. Terry Dolan, who died at, 219? And in fact, you mentioned also Ulysses. At one stage, I think he was director of the James Joyce Museum. But an incredible linguist and lexicographer, and brilliant, whether he was here on RTÉ in the programmes that Peter Mooney used to produce with him, or indeed he had a slot latterly with Sean Moncrief on News Talk. But a brilliant... enlightener about language and the use of language and the use of words and where words came from. But you knew Terry.
I did, and what a lovely man. And in addition to just being a brilliant mind and a lovely man, he was always interested in developing people as well. I had the privilege to look after him for a while, and even while he was in the hospital here under my care, you know, he found out that the student nurses had to do a dissertation, so he brought a little group tutorial of them in to teach them how to write a dissertation.
Brilliant.
He was supervising students, you know, from his own university, and they were I practically had to wait online to get in to see him, to be honest with you. He was so busy while he was in hospital, but he was such a lovely man, and he sparked off an interest in my own mind about the origin of words. And so words can be very offensive, and I'll be a little on the verge of risque here now, Joe, but for example, the origin of a very offensive word in the English language, if used in a certain way, which would be known commonly as the C word, or the forbidden C word. The origins of that word, because Terry was exploring how language can mean different things and how innocent language can be offensive. The origins of that word, Terry informed me, was from the Norman for the white tail of a rabbit.
Okay.
And when you think that the Normans introduced the rabbit into Ireland, and of course the Irish word for rabbit is coneen, you could see the origins of where the word might have originally come from. So words can have a very innocent origin as well. and now be used in very vulgar terms, or similarly words which were very innocent or words which were very vulgar can now become innocent in terms or used in a different context, like I mentioned with the political phrase. So I think language in itself, most people, I'm a great optimist, most people are well-meaning, and they would be mortified if they felt they weren't using the right term. I think there's a danger that you can kind of push people away from the good of getting involved and improving society if we're too overly prescriptive in our analysis of the language they use.
Okay. Thanks. That's Dr. Ronan Collins, and I think Tom is next, and then Martine is next, and I think Siobhan and Marion. But Dr. Collins, thanks indeed. Siobhan also, and Marion. Back after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Tom Crow. Tom, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe. That band that was on, the geriatrician, what's his name, Ronan?
Ronan Collins, yeah.
Ah, lovely, spot on. All about context. I'm probably heading to being a geriatric myself. I'm 62. I don't know when I get to be, maybe at retirement age, I'm in a different category, but I never want to be called an older person. The ER does absolutely nothing for me. I'm happy, quite happy to be called old. I don't see what the problem is with that word.
But you tell us here you're 62. That's not old, is it?
It's certainly older than 60, and I've more
exactly.
years.
But it's younger than 63.
Indeed, yes, yeah. So I don't get the ER thing. I think we're thrashing around all the time to keep softening language. Now, I readily admit I'm an old-fashioned language pedant. And
I love it.
The accuracy of language is more important to me than whether it can
okay,
be
so let's go through them. Disabled, is there... People bridled. Some people bridled.
I think it's all right. I think it's all right. Some people who are disabled, if I may use that term, don't seem to mind it, and some do. So you have to be careful whom you have to ask permission to say it or not.
Now one of the first words that was raised yesterday that upset Sinead, rightly so, and she got a change in the E version of the book immediately. Retard, referring to a person.
It's become an awful word, but. All it means is to hold back, but it does give such offence now. I wouldn't use it, I suppose.
But as I said, yes, retarded is used in motor technology. For example, there is a retarder on brakes. Apparently, you have the brakes going downhill.
Yeah, because it holds back or it stops being taken action.
Handicapped.
I remember using it in the 60s. It was no big deal.
Yesterday, this word menos validado, minus validity in Spanish.
Now,
in Spanish,
I know a bit of Spanish. Menos válido, it means it's exactly the same as invalid in English. Now that word, that pronunciation suggests the older meaning, which is without strength, not strong, and that meaning precedes. The meaning we have for being, relevant, not relevant, allowed or permitted, as in valid. It doesn't mean without validity. It means literally from Latin, without strength.
It
is understood as that in Spanish.
Okay. Tom, what do you think of young people today and texting, LOL and... BTW and all the symbols and emojis.
I'm way behind. I have to ask my son about that. You know,
but that's the development of language as well, isn't it? Isn't that the way language is changing?
Which is horrible. That
was my question. You've fallen for it. Is it horrible?
Yeah, because we lose the cultural richness of the origin of words.
But other words arrive and they have a cultural richness as well.
Do they? you could ask Christine Crowe in the National Archives for everything. Katrina, I beg your pardon, Katrina. But when she's asked about how much written information and data there is in the world, how much it's doubled or tripled in the last few years. And as she says, that doubling or tripling is worthless, that all the good stuff was long ago. One other thing, Joe, another thing is whether you have a condition, you're a diabetic, you're a cystic, you're a hemophiliac, something like that. I don't see what the problem is with that either, rather than a person with. I mean, it's correct in its context, as Ronan said, in its context. Like, I'm not a person with Irishness. I'm an Irish person, you know. I'm not a person with maleness. I think I'm a male. What's the difficulty with using a label when it's correct in its context? Nobody's setting out to define you entirely by it or to give offence by it.
Okay. I'm bringing this up because you say that in your initial contribution that you're a hemophiliac, but you don't like being described as somebody with hemophilia.
No.
Why not?
Why are you beating around the bush? Just go straight with the adjective. Use one word. You know. But I don't wear it on my T-shirt. Here's Tom the hemophiliac. It's just. In its context, if we're talking about medical things or something, some aspect of it that might affect what I can do or can't do, then the term is fine by me.
Okay. Stay with us if you would, Tom. Martina Lowe is in Offaly. Martina, your point, please. Hey, Martina.
How are you going? It's great speaking to you again. I have been listening to your show yesterday and a couple of minutes ago there now, and I feel that any children or teenagers or adults who have a disability should be, speaking to as a person who have additional needs.
Okay. And
Sorry if you're interrupting me. I am extremely strong in the area of special needs.
Okay.
Because I'm after completing an SNA 5 and I got a distinction. So actually heading on to do an SNA 6 now in September. I'm also qualified in hospitality, but I want to go into the sector of disability as my first love of a job.
So your point is, it was raised earlier, you're differently abled.
I don't see myself as any different as anyone else, because before I was born, I was kept too long in the womb and I was left with a lot of oxygen to my brain, but it has not defined me in any way possible. Anyway at all.
Yeah.
I went to college in Athlone and I done a higher certificate in art in Hotel Bar. And I graduated 3 years ago. So I'm after doing a hell of a lot of courses after I finished college. So I don't see myself as any different from anyone else. So I wish for everyone to see an individual as an intelligent and well able to get on in life.
Okay.
And I could have a slight speech impediment, but I can cross the hind legs off a donkey in the best of times.
Okay.
But please, if anyone's listening in, please accept anyone who has any sort of ability who sees them as a person who are strong and able-bodied. It doesn't matter if they have... I don't know how I can word it at the minute. But look at everyone who has an ability.
Yeah. Okay, I can't... Which comes back to that embracing phrase earlier on, of differently abled. The fact that I can't play the piano does not make me disabled.
No, it doesn't.
Okay.
Absolutely not. Everyone learns in a different way. Like I had to learn as I was in college. I might have been a bit slower in some subjects than others, but I worked around how I'm able find another way around how to fix a problem or how to understand accountancy, you know. So I learned an awful lot in different ways.
Okay.
And there are two words that I have been hearing a listener a second ago saying about handicap that goes to my gut and my stomach. I absolutely hate that word. Hate it. I'm old fashioned in some respects, but in that's everything I have to put across anyway, Joe.
Okay, that's Martina Law, and awfully thanks again, Martina. Mairead is in Lucan. Your point, please, Mairead.
Hi, Joe. My point is, I have arthritis. I'm an older person / senior citizen, and there are no car park spaces for people like myself who need extra space to open the door to get in and out of their car, in the same way that parents of young infants need more space to open the door to take their infant out.
So you want, are there not designated places? Well, how would you, okay, come back to the difficulty. How would you define older people, Mairead? Would you say anyone eligible for the...
Well, they're defined as over 65 in most cases, aren't they?
Yeah,
but they
are.
Can be younger than have...
Well, it's going up, but isn't it 66?
Yeah. But there could be younger people as well who have mobility problems and don't need an... wheelchair, or especially older people, a lot have arthritis, and there's no places for them. You know, someone will park their car beside you so tight at the driver's door that you can't get back in.
But that affects everybody, doesn't it?
I know, but it's particularly bad for someone who can't climb over the passenger seat to get into the driver's seat.
Good point, but that's invariably the fault of the car park, in that they're trying to get more spaces in.
Yeah, the spaces are too tight. But they're able to give a double space, an extra space each side for parents of, plus the car park space to parents of infants.
Tom Crowe, Tom, what do you think of that? There maybe should be designated spaces, I'm afraid to use the phrase, for older people, Tom.
Older people with arthritis. Yeah, of course. Can I go back, Joe, to the speaker before that? Sorry, not to be disrespectful to the woman talking.
Martina.
That's spot on. If she wants to do away with all labels, grand. But let's do that rather than fight over nitsy-bitsy letters here, letters there, and little finer points of words. Do you know what I mean?
What do you think of Mairead's suggestion, though? If you saw an area, if you saw a car parking space marked older people only.
Yeah.
No, mobility problems, Joe. People with mobility problems.
I'd respect it and I'd cross off the ER.
Old people.
Well, a lot of people prefer older people to elderly
I know.
Okay, stay with us. Breda Sullivan is from Wexford. Breda, good afternoon.
Joe, I'm here and I'm amazed at how you don't understand people with disabilities.
Okay.
Now, I'm totally blind for the last few years. I always had a very bad sight.
Okay.
Wouldn't be able to read proper print. Yeah. I walked through Braille and I have everything done through Braille.
Right.
I've raised 11 children. All them went to school. They all went to school, the third level education. And they're all out walking. And five of them have a sight problem.
Okay.
You know, but it's the public have no idea. I've just been off the phone, like I have a spinal injury there at the moment. And I've just been off the phone. St. John's Hospital rang to say that they made appointment for physio.
Yeah.
And she says, do you want me to talk to your daughter? I said, no, you're speaking to me. So why do you want to ring her?
Oh, and when
they pass on the message.
She wanted to talk to your daughter about you.
Yes, about me. After I raising that daughter. Okay. Bring her to her.
And how did you gently chide her?
I just said, look, I can speak. I just can't see, but I can speak. And I can know. When I was in hospital, I was locked into a bed. There was two bars put up. You think it was a baby in a cot.
Yeah.
I was walked to the toilet. I had been in the hospital 11 times having children. I knew exactly where the toilet was. You know, but I did say, I said nothing. I just went on with him because I knew I wouldn't be long in. You know, it's ridiculous. It's your eyes are affected, your arms are not, your body
yeah,
is not.
Your brain
memory
is
good.
In that sense, yeah.
And it's the same with a person with autism or with any other disability. They have their own way of working out. You know, I mind the children with disabilities. I train to look after children with disabilities. And that was my career, was caring for children. I did that when I got married, along with having my own. You know, and nobody was afraid to give me a child to mind. You know?
Yeah.
That was my career, minding children. You know, but it's ridiculous, though, listening to it. It's laughable, really, now, you know.
And
that
what
they walk
do
you around by the arm and they nearly, nearly carry you. They don't let you walk.
And Breda, what do people who have got their full sight, what do they automatically presume you can't do?
I don't know, because see, my children are used to me having bad sight, and they're used to their brothers or sisters having bad sight. We were raised up with blindness. I went to school in Merion for the Blind, and I never regretted it, because one thing we were taught was to be independent. Independent. Don't let anyone lug you around. Or did you ever notice the way they catch you? They just grab you and bring you, thinking you're not held to walk. And suddenly your eyes are affected.
Yeah, yeah.
They don't come gently and pick you by the arm. They come and grab you. It's like a snap and grab. You know, I'm here now. If you wanted to come down, you wouldn't think a blind person washed the floor. Someone asked me there, how do you wash the floor with a mop, I said.
And why would I not think a blind person washed the floor?
I don't think sight people think they can do anything. Well, maybe you do, but we can
no,
do
I don't know. I'm asking. And Breda, what are you saying? Your floor is so clean that people say, how did you do it? Without knowing where the dirty bits were.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the whole floor gets dirty. So you clean the whole floor. No.
Yeah.
I can type with my eyes shut even. We learn to touch type. We learn to read with Braille. There's nothing you give me anything to do. The only thing I can't do is drive a car. Because I'd be dangerous on the road.
Yeah, I understand that. I understand that.
And that's about the only thing a blind person can't do. Most of us, and parents can do it. Like, I'd never mollycoddle my children that had sight problems. So if you banged into a chair or you picked yourself up and you're gone again. And you learned where the things were.
Yeah.
You know, it's amazing to hear people amazed that someone can't see or that someone can't walk. No, they can't walk if someone has to wheel the wheelchair. But you know, I've seen a blind person in Merion wheel her own wheelchair from the room where she stayed to the chapel. Now.
Okay, points well made. Thanks indeed, Breda, and kind regards to you and your family. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I mentioned earlier on there, Joe at RT.ie, but I mentioned Terry Dolan, who was a great presence in this station, indeed, and an incredible presence in UCD. And Ronan Collins, in fact, brought him up, the memory of Terry, who died 3 years ago. By the way, he's written a number of books, and I presume they are part of his legacy on Hiberno, the Hiberno English dictionary. But then another listener pointed out that, which I was unaware of, to my shame, that the 25th anniversary of the death of Noel Brown, the former government minister, former TD, activist, doctor as well, passed at the end of May, the end of last month there, unremarked upon, and she felt it should have been remarked. Now, Sue Brown is the daughter of Noel Brown. Sue, good afternoon.
Hello, good afternoon. Thank you very much for having me on your programme.
And Sue, is of course your father is remembered in your family, but is there a memorial to your dad anywhere?
Well, I believe there is one in Waterford. I haven't actually seen it because I've been living abroad for quite a few years, but I do hope to be able to go down and see it. Yes, there is one down there. And I think there was one recently... Piemont Hospital in County Dublin, I think they were talking about putting up something, but I'm not 100% sure about that.
And the reason Piemont is because your father, almost yes. single-handedly, well, he was a minister, he was appointed a minister on his first day in the Dáil, Minister for Health, and he, younger people will not remember this, in one sense, fortunately, but the scourge of tuberculosis, which ravaged this country in the 40s and 50s, and indeed into the early 60s, your father took it, took that whole issue by the scruff of the neck when it was neither
That's
popular
right.
nor profitable, and built hospitals like Piemont.
That's right, he did indeed. And I think also, I mean, he was also very lucky because at that time, I think it was streptomycin, I'm not sure, that came in as well.
Yeah.
So it was kind of a good combination, but... He, yes, he was able to nationalise the sweepstakes and get the money out and start building. And in fact, recently I sent a short letter to Leo Varadkar when he was Taoiseach and said, listen, how about doing something like that and building houses for everybody? You know, it can be done.
It's such a... Your father's background was very, very poor, wasn't it, Sue?
Oh, yes, yes, yes. He had, his mother took them, after his father died, his mother took himself and his siblings to England. And not long after they arrived there, she died. And then his brother Joe died, and he was buried in a pauper's grave in London.
Yes.
And all in all, I mean, they had a terrible life. And I think he just didn't want that to happen to anybody else, because that was because of tuberculosis. And obviously no health care, you know, unless you could pay for it. I mean, there was health care, I'm sure, but not unless you could pay for it. So that made him very, very sure that he wanted to get rid of it. One reason he decided to study medicine.
And did he not have a mentor? Did someone help him when he was...
Yes, he did. He was asked home, I think, while he was in school in England, he was invited home to Dublin.
Okay.
And the family who invited him home were the Chance family, and they were all involved in medicine, but they were also very, very well off. And he used to stay with, apparently she lived in Nullarmore, which I think is now a university residence and building, Lady Chance. And she said... Look, you know, I think after he went back to England, and he didn't really know what was going to happen to him next, and she said, if you like, we'll put you through Trinity, which, of course, was just a god. I mean, he had loads and loads of luck along the way, really.
Yeah.
And he said, yes, of course. But then he got TB, so he missed out on part of his studies, but then went back to studies again as soon as he was better. But he was quite a long time out, and he had a lung removed. At that time.
And TB was of the lungs and obviously...
Yes, well, it was of the lungs and I did not know it really. I think it was bones as well because my mother had TB in her back and she spent a year while they were going out on her back with tuberculosis as well.
Yeah.
So it hit both of them and everybody else in the country. I mean, everybody had a relative who had suffered, I'm sure.
And when people, younger people, especially now with the pandemic in the last 2 years... TB,
yes.
In many ways, was an epidemic in Ireland. The whole
for
image
sure
of people being, it was so contagious, people being put in a shed at the bottom of the garden,
yes.
If you had a garden, to isolate, all that resonances of what we're going
yes.
through now. And somebody sent us a photograph, Sue, of the memorial in Waterford. This garden is dedicated
yes.
to the memory of Dr. Noel Brown, TD, born 1915 in Bath Street in Waterford. As a Minister for Health, his lasting legacy to the Irish people was the virtual eradication of tuberculosis. So that's.
I think if nothing else, if there is a monument, I don't know, wherever it's put, at least it makes people think back and then maybe gives them the courage to do the same thing, you know, to say, well, look, I'm not going to put up with this any longer. I'm going to do something about it. It can be done. And that's one good reason for a monument. It makes people talk.
And it was done. Despite he had opposition. Now, when he brought in tried to bring in it's laughable to even think of it today that it would generate opposition. At that time, it generated opposition from the church. The mother and baby scheme, which was basically better health care for mothers with young children. The church. Anyway.
I must say, in all fairness, I don't think it was just the church. I think the doctors were against it as well, to some degree, because it also took away their freedom of charging and freedom of all due respects as well, not paying taxes, etc. But he always said, and I remember him on the Late Late Show to Gay Byrne, God rest his soul, saying he was going to pay all these doctors a very good salary, because as a doctor himself, he knew how long it took to qualify, you know. It was, yes, it was the church, of course, but it was also the doctors who were terrified of the church and also didn't want to lose their rights to charge what they wanted, you know.
And people might not remember that. Isn't it true? I don't know whether you were privy to this, Sue, but at one stage, your father was approached by Michael D. Higgins, who was then a stalwart of the Labour Party and the government minister and the TD, and true a lot. But your father approached Noel to see would Noel stand in the presidential election.
Yes, that did happen. And very kind of Michael D to try and organise it. But I don't think he got enough support from, you know, I think you have to go to all the different counties and get support. And I don't think he was going to get enough for it, really. So, well, anyway, finally, Michael D managed to get in. So that's something. And I heard he's made a very good speech about homelessness yesterday as well. So,
well, I see every opposition TD is quoting it this morning in the Dáil and indeed outside the Dáil. So he certainly has struck a chord with people. Your father wrote a very, very fine book as well, which was a bestseller at the time. Bobby Balla, the artist, has done a stunning portrait of him, which is among the greatest portraits in the country. Stay with us, Sue. Elizabeth Maloney wants to remind us. Elizabeth, you used to meet Noel Brown.
I used to. He'd come up from Galway, if I remember right.
Yeah.
And we would meet in the hotel and have a chat about life. Okay. I met him through wanting to start playgroups and the needs of children, really.
Okay.
And I was extremely impressed by him. I have rarely met somebody like him, actually. And we became friends.
Okay.
I just thought he was very badly treated. He was so sincere. That's what came out of him, the sincerity. And he was, if you like, kind of ignored. People didn't, in some ways they didn't want to accept him because what he was saying was true. And they didn't
want to.
Well, I
think a lot of us don't like to hear the truth, yeah.
Yes. I mean, I'm delighted to hear your voice because it brings the memory. It brings the memory back, and I really enjoyed the two of us just sat there chatting in the hotel. Your mother, I think, took off. She left us have our little chat, we just talked about people's rights and all the rest of it. But
did you ever manage to do anything then after the chats? Were you able to start off anything?
Well, we started the playgroups and the creches and we got money for it and we stopped the slapping of children in schools like that,
super.
You know.
Yeah.
And it was his kind of, he kept kind of saying, you can do it. You know, I was kind of saying, oh yeah, I can't go off and live in Connemara, was it he was in?
In fact where I'm ending up going. I've just been fixing up this cottage in Connemara, so I hope
if I
can get in touch with you, I'll come down and have a cuppa down there.
Okay,
I think it is.
Stay with us both, Sue. I need to take a break, but as Elizabeth said, Elizabeth used the phrase truth-telling, and there'll be more truth-telling on Liveline after this break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Joe Duffy!
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Dr. Noel Brown, 25th anniversary of his passing, was it at the end of May there. You're the one who sent me the photograph of the memorial. Where is it in Waterford?
That's right, Joe. It's in Bath Street in Waterford. I think his father, when he was working in Waterford, when Noel was born, the house is in Bath Street. That's where the memorial is now. And just when I heard his daughter speaking she hasn't seen the memorial.
Is the house still standing?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's quite a recent one. It's there a number of years, but recently enough, you know.
Okay.
So I suppose it's very appropriate that there is a memorial in Waterford, because a lot of people, well, they probably would know that Ard Kyn Hospital in Waterford, now Waterford University Hospital, was one of the original sanatoria built by Noel Brown at the time of the TB. And that's a fantastic monument to Noel Brown as well. And he was one of those people, Joe, if anybody read his book, Against the Tide. He was a pioneer, really, a visionary in medicine in Ireland. And I even went over to see his grave in Ballymahown in Connemara. Beautiful place there, overlooking Galway Bay and the Aran Islands. And apart from his gravestone, there's a little seat, a stone seat, where you can sit down there. And if you're there on a fine day now, it's something to behold, you know. Yeah.
And I also read a book by Dr. James Deaney, who was a civil servant, but a contemporary of Noel's. And he was an extremely forward-looking man.
Well, it's a combination of James Deaney. Actually, I knew James Deaney to speak to on the phone when I worked in the hospital in Waterford before I retired. And he ended up retired, living down in Rosslare. And it was a combination of the two. I suppose James Deaney would have been the predecessor of Tony Houlihan. He was the medical man to the Department of Health at the time. So he had all the administration skills. He's a man originally from the north of Ireland, Belfast, I think. And it was a combination of Noel Brown's medical knowledge and his administrative skills. And then I suppose the two of them came up with the idea of getting the sweepstakes money at the time. Remember the Irish hospital sweepstakes?
Of course I do, yeah.
And that was all the money that went in to build those sanatoriums. Because, I mean, when Ard Kyn Hospital was built in the 1950s, there wasn't too much money around the country. So the key to it was getting the money, and the sweepstakes provided that key, you know.
And Sue, did your father have many political allies, friends even?
Well, he did. Yes, he did. He had Jack McQuillan, who was wonderful, who passed away, and he had Noel Hartnett, and he had quite a few. I mean, he was a very passive, not passive, but quiet, gentle person. He didn't row with anybody, you know, which I think the chap on the phone now could be able to tell you, but you know, he was just gentle and just wanted to do things and didn't like upsetting anybody. So
there was no bitterness in your father, absolutely no bitterness at all. Maybe a bit of disappointment, but no bitterness.
Okay, Sue, stay with us. Another caller who was a nurse wants to talk to us after this break. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
It arose unplanned, on Liveline as things often do. The memory of Dr. Noel Brown, whose anniversary passed, every 25th anniversary passed. Miriam Lamb, Miriam, remind us, your mother was a TB nurse.
Yeah, my mother trained in England, started December 1938, and qualified as a TB nurse in the Brompton Chest Hospital. She returned to Dublin and was working in Kevin's, and was horrified by the conditions. No, not enough hot water, laundry or whatever. And she used to tell that they would have to dry the patients in the sheets they took off their beds. And she was horrified by this because she had come from war-torn London. Anyway, my mother came from a Fine Gael background. My father was a Fianna Fáiler, and whenever she had the opportunity to vote for a Labour candidate, she would do so surreptitiously. It was never mentioned at home, but I remember one particular election. I think Conor Cruz might have topped the poll, or else he gave Charlie Haughey a run for his money. And my father couldn't understand why there was whooping and hollering in the sitting room, because none of us were Charlie Haughey fans, but it was, we were siding with my mother and the Labour victory. So she went to her grave singing his praises for what he had tried to do with the health service. So as long as I'm alive, he won't be forgotten.
Well said.
And I'm out of breath because I'm walking the hills. So anyway, that's my memory.
And you remember, Miriam, when people with TB were?
It was the
COVID of its day, with much more serious consequences.
But interestingly,
not diminishing what's happened to so many people.
Interestingly, my mother's brother died when he was 17 or 18, and she always said that he got rheumatic fever, which struck terror in me because I got rheumatic fever when I was about that age. But when I looked up his death record, he died in the county home with TB, and it was never spoken of.
It was such an awful time in the country. It really was.
Joe, do you remember the mass X-ray programme?
Of course I do, and the mobile units coming to the school. The trucks.
Yeah,
The Bedford
the
trucks.
Outside,
you used to climb into,
The one outside. I remember the one outside the Bank of Ireland in College
That's
Green.
That's right, there permanently, Sue, thanks, Miriam. Sue, are you coming back to live in Ireland?
Yes. I've been spending the last couple of years. In fact, I was home for my dad's 25th. I went down to obviously the cottage is very, very close to the graveyard, which, as one of your listeners pointed out, strangely enough for a graveyard, but it's quite a beautiful place overlooking the sea. And I'm fixing up their cottage and hoping to come back. I'm retired now and I'm looking forward to coming back and living there.
Okay.
If I can afford it.
That's the caveat in every conversation now in Ireland.
That's another story, isn't it?
If I can afford it. Okay, Sue, great to hear you, Sue. Great, Sue Brown, the daughter of Dr. Noel Brown. Back tomorrow at 1:45. Shane Galvin is our broadcast coordinator. Damien Chanel's is on sound. Annette Egan produce. And Ray Darcy is next.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.